You burst through the door, you find a small room filled with gold and jewels, and a red dragon. He starts to breathe. Save or die!
Welcome to the Save or Die Podcast, a podcast about classic Dungeons & Dragons. If it's in a box, we'll talk about it.
Number 27 of the Save or Die Podcast. DM Vince sitting in along with DM Glenn.
Chili peppers and bitches. Chili peppers and bitches. Hello.
DM Crispy.
You stole my thing. You stole my bitches.
You can steal my chili peppers.
And DM Julie is too here. As well as here.
I'm much sweeter than chili peppers.
She also too is here as well. Yeah. Also.
And she burns my gut too. So.
On top of it.
Julie's like a habanero pepper, I think.
Is she?
Yeah.
She's the red hair.
Yeah. She looks sweet and nice, but when you take a bite out of it, it burns your mouth.
She could.
Or smacks you upside the head.
Yeah, or smacks you upside the head, yeah.
But I thought she had blue skin. Would that make her a blueberry?
Possibly.
Yeah.
I don't know. Whatever. So, we have a new article up on our website by the Secret DM about villains. Go there, saveordie.info. For our website, and you can check out the new article. You can follow me on Twitter, the Evil DM. Glenn, what's your Twitter? I know you were on Twitter.
At
Smokestack Jones.
Smokestack Jones, I believe. You can try Glenn Hall's. No, Smokestack Jones, yeah.
And Crispy?
I'm at Oh No, It's Crispy. That's C-H-R-I-S-P-Y.
Is that a handle or a warning?
That's a warning.
And I don't know, Julie, are you on Twitter at all or no?
Oh, yeah. For 19 Nocturne, of course. I'm at 19 Nocturne.
As well as you can find Julie at 19NocturneBoulevard.net or is it .com?
Both.
Both.
And you can listen to her blog and her shows and support Julie by donating lots of money to Julie.
And we all
Julie
listen,
likes
right?
money.
Yes. Support Julie's cast because she does a great job and she loves everybody.
Yeah, the more she does, the more she makes. The more she makes, the more she can get on me.
More, yeah, the push line.
Yeah.
Oh, and I have a super secret April Fool's episode coming out.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah.
It's going to be a hoot.
Okay, cool.
I've already been shanghaied for that.
Me too.
Yeah. Oh, you do? Cool.
Yeah.
Featuring Trask.
Bum, bum, bum.
Oi.
Uh-oh.
That would be kind of scary.
Yeah. Trask and Ragnar, right?
Oh, gosh.
Anyway,
I believe Trask talks like this.
No, we took that away from him. He no longer has the scepter of kingdom power or whatever.
It got taken away from me.
Uh-oh. How did that game go, anyway?
All right.
Anyway. Can you say anything?
Not really, because they haven't been published, so.
Yeah.
Oh.
Next show,
yeah.
Top secret
is right. If you want to follow Glenn's thoughts, if you can possibly follow that pattern, you can go to TooMuchJohnson at blogspot.com. Glenn?
Yes, I'm here.
Your blog, TooMuchJohnson at blogspot.com?
That is correct, sir.
Or you can follow mine at TheEvilGMThisTime.com.
And also Ask a DM.
Yes, you can go to our website, ask a DM, and ask a video question. You guys got any lately or no?
I think I have one, but I haven't really been getting as much as I have usually getting.
Trask Lover stopped?
I guess so.
The novelty has worn off.
Speaking of stalkers, on Dragon's Foot, Thorki says he's creating an all-female pantheon. He's creating goddesses for Julie and Liz.
I know, I saw that.
The goddess of nonsense.
I told you insanity.
Chaos.
They go together. I'm a multitasker.
Okay. Shall we go in the cauldron? Or did we just? We just did. How about that?
So, Glenn, what do we have for emails this week?
Emails. Yeah, we got about 4 emails.
Yeah.
I herded through them, or rather I sorted through them, and pulled out 4 real juicy ones. Mm. First comes from Austin.
Four out of the 4?
Austin question mark. And he says, hey, everyone, I love the podcast, and I'm new to D&D. I'm something. I don't know what it says. And I was wondering if you could have any tips for a starter on playing D&D. Thanks, and keep up the good work with the podcast. Well, that's casting a wide net.
Starters?
Yeah.
Getting into it, I guess, for tips. For people who are just new.
Well, remember your dice, and don't drink too much Mountain Dew. That's all I can think of.
Find people to play with? That might be a good one. I mean, are you looking for tips on how to get into a game or how to get into playing? Or that's a good question.
Have any tips for a starter playing D&D?
Okay.
I guess the best advice I could give is Will Wheaton's advice of don't be a dick.
That is actually excellent advice.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. And it's good advice for life, too.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure you got the core books. Listen to the DM. Do what he says. And you can't go wrong, really.
Pick up a retro clone since it's free.
They are free.
So it's like Labyrinth Lord or Sword and Witch, just in case you don't like it. I mean, that's why you didn't invest any money.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Also, though, if you're looking at this as a player and not as a GM, you want to make sure you've got the same rules that whatever the house is using.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't do you any good to pick up whatever rule book if it's not the one that everyone else is using, because that's just going to make you, a dick.
And if you do have the same house rules as everybody else is using, if you have the same game everybody else is using, make sure you know their house rules.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, the best bet I could say is if you're using the same book, I don't know what book he's doing. I assume he's playing. He wants to play classic D&D because he's, you know, calling into us.
Yeah.
I would say whoever has the book, borrow it from them for a day or two and read it over and see if you like it.
Mm-hmm.
If you want a recommendation, Metzer,
Labyrinth or Holmes.
How about you, Vince?
Well, without,
I think we need some cough drops.
Yeah, I think so too.
But one thing I would suggest is, you know, make a character who is going to have a connection to another character in the group, because that way you'll have somebody to work with, at least for your first character, and then you'll have backup. You'll have a character, not just somebody else, you know, to hang with. Your character will have a reason to be there, to be with somebody else.
I'd say another good idea is to have at least a backup character. If, you know, this is your first time, classic D&D can be pretty lethal.
Yeah. It also depends on the class. If you're playing a first level magic user, find the most effective spell you can for your one spell.
Yeah.
So that's something like sleep.
I would think it would be something like hide behind warrior.
Enlarge has always been good for
invest people. In darts.
Invest in darts.
Darts and a staff. I can always use a good quarter staff if you have to.
Yeah.
Darts, daggers, you know, anything you can throw at them.
It depends on what book he has, what book the group is playing. If he's just playing on his own, like he just wants to get into it, just grab one of the retro clones.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's, like I said, Labyrinth Lord, Dark Dungeons, that kind of thing, and just see what you like.
They start simple. Go with Labyrinth Lord or Sword and Wizardry. Just start there. Yeah.
It is really much easier to begin as a player than to start by trying to GM.
True.
Yeah.
Definitely.
All right, Glenn, what's the next letter?
Okay, we got one from Andrew. Hi, folks. I have a question I don't think has been answered yet. How did a group of people from different parts of the country end up forming such an entertaining podcast team? Well, the answer is epoxy.
The magic of the internet.
The magic of Skype and the internet. Well, the magic of the internet, anyway.
Well, you see, I have this magical ability of pulling together people. No, I don't know. It all started with me talking to Julie, who had me talk to Glenn.
So it's my fault. I get it. Always blame the chick.
Oh, Julie's fault.
And before that, he talked to Liz and Mike. I wanted to say Liz and Dick. I was thinking of Richard Burton. Liz and Mike. And, you know, it just grew from there.
And Crispy came along because he was following me on RFI, weren't you?
Yeah, I was looking for, like, OSR podcasts, because I've been in the OSR, you know, a couple years now, into retro clones and stuff like that. And I just kind of – I weaseled my way into the podcast. I was like a fan, and then I was like, hey, if you never need – if you ever need like a backup host, you know, I'm your man.
I think he casted like some evil spell on us and allowed him in or something.
And now he has backup.
Even involve cookies.
It always does, it seems like.
Well, it usually would. Where's my cookies?
Yeah, it's just sort of – we got backup hosts now. So,
well, Chris is becoming like a regular host now, it seems like.
Oh, yeah, luckily my work schedule has permitted me to kind of weasel my way in even more.
Your dubious free time.
Yes, Crispy's our little expert here on the podcast of new versions and old versions. So
he is.
He's like our Wesley of Angel coming here.
Yeah, he's also our youngest members, so the Wesley thing is appropriate.
Yeah. Now can you do a British accent badly?
Hey, he didn't have a bad British accent.
Well, he is British.
Well, yeah. He just sounds like he's got something shoved up. Well, anyway.
Well, that's the character. Like, Wesley is the stick in the mud.
You're not going to grow a beard and become badass on us, are you?
Well, I hope so.
Oh, jeez.
Just, you know.
That's what
are we talking about the right – which Wesley are we talking about?
We're talking about Wesley from Angel, not Wesley Crusher, who no one likes.
Yeah, well, you are the youngest. That's why I said you're the Wesley. I thought of Wesley Crusher. You're the Wesley. See?
Thanks, Glenn.
Wesley crush me.
Yeah. We went all Whedonverse, and Glenn went all Star Trek-y on us.
Yeah.
We went Whedon, he went Wheaton.
Yeah.
Wheaton's
anyway.
Cool. Wesley may not be, but Wheaton's cool.
Anyway, Wheaton is a very cool guy.
Our next letter is from Alex Schroeder. Hi, RPG Circus, Roll for Initiative, and Save or Die podcasters. I'm running a one-page dungeon contest again this year. Perhaps you'd be interested in putting that into the news section, and we just did. Feel free to ask questions and all that. Campaignwiki.org. Plus, if you know any other podcasters, new or old school, that might be showing some dungeon blood, I'd be very interested in hearing about it.
Yay.
Welcome to the Dungeon Love Line. That's as far as I can take that. I'm your host, Barry White.
All right.
Our last email we have is from Joe Falk. Hi, SOD team.
Hi, Joe. I've been holding that in this whole time. Sorry.
Okay. I love the show and really enjoyed listening through the archives on your website. I have a few questions I'd love feedback on. I'd love to hear your response to one or all of them. Now he's got four questions here.
Oh, wow.
How does an RPG tournament work? I'm a longtime kitchen table gamer, but have no idea how the tournaments work, and I'm curious to hear more. How do they work? Very well, thank you.
I'm sure that's helpful.
Well,
I know Glenn used to play in the RPGA.
No. RPG tournaments. I thought I meant how do conventions work. I've never played in a tournament, though. I used to play their weekends, and get points and go up and level and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's all I've ever done, too.
I've never played a tournament. From what I've seen, they're kind of grueling. Or they can't.
I think the Tower of Gygax was considered an RPGA tournament at one point.
Was it?
Yeah, you had to survive.
Oh, well, that's true for Tomb of Horrors, too, but...
Yeah.
It also was a tournament.
We had four questions, you said?
Yeah. And second, do you guys favor OD&D or AD&D rules for PC hit dice?
Well, because it's classic D&D, so obviously we're going to support classic on this show.
I mean, yeah, we can divide it even more. I mean, do you want Holmes hit dice? Do you want, Metzer hit dice? That kind of thing.
Well, whichever rules edition we prefer, that's the one we support.
Yeah, that's true. So we're going old school.
At the moment.
And any advice for me on introducing my young daughter to D&D? I'd love to get your thoughts on who and when to start her out.
Wonder how old she is.
That's, me too. My grandson, my oldest one's 7, and I'm trying to get him interested in it.
This is when that Rainbow Bridge...
Rainbow Lodge.
Rainbow Lodge, yeah.
That one.
Yeah.
Because that one really was... I mean, sorry.
Well, that's okay. The usual on the box, it always said 12 and up. But I don't know anybody who really follows that. It's like, they can hold a pencil, they can hold some dice. Okay, let's play.
But The best thing I've seen parents do with kids that they want to start getting into D&D is when they're really young, start doing like magical story time at bedtime. And like do stories and let the child like start creating stuff in the story, like this happens, and you say, what happens next? And they say, oh, and the giant horse, he comes out and stomps into the forest. Let them start role playing that way. I've seen parents do that.
I was just gonna say I have a 3-page document on my computer that someone drafted up called RPG Kids, and it's a free thing you can get. Just Google RPG Kids, it's all one word. And it basically uses a pair of D12s and D6s, and you have, like, your kid will play the good guys, and then they'll play the bad guys. Cool. And it's a very, very simplified version of quote-unquote D&D. But if you're looking to get them, like, to learn rules and have them, like, suffer consequences if they do something bad, I think that would be a good way to do it.
Cool. Yeah.
As on a interestingly different note, I one time hosted a game at a sci-fi convention for, you know, introducing to role-playing in general, and to make it as simple and friendly and not having to learn anything as possible for very small children, I had them all play cats.
Wow.
Wow.
They played kittens who had to defend their lady's house from burglars.
Huh. Hmm.
And, I mean, like I said, this was aimed at very young children. But they, you know, and anything they came up with, I'd give them a chance. It's like, I'm going to jump up on the bookshelf and jump down on his head. Okay.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, I like that. I love reading stuff about people who introduce their kids into D&D. So if like, you do, you know, have a session with your kids, send in, like, what happened. Email us, because I'd like to read about it.
Saver.podcast@gmail.com. Yeah, I tried to. In my story, Greg kids make me tell them bedtime stories before they go to sleep. It's usually the usual, you know, three bears, Jack and the Beanstalk. Like the other night, I said Jack and the Beanstalk, and I started letting them, you know, see if they'll pick up on stuff. And my older one's lying there, and I said, and Jack ran from the giant, and he tripped him, and the giant fell. Because I was thinking of that Bugs Bunny cartoon where he sticks his foot out, and, you know, Elmer the giant, boom!
Yeah.
And immediately it's like, Grandpa, he's like this big, and the giant is real. How's he going to? It's like, kid, you're overanalyzing at an early age.
So he's definitely bound to be a rules lawyer.
Yes, yes. It's like, God,
he's already dealing with, you know, hit dice infractions or something.
Yeah. And our last question is, how often in your gaming careers have you brought a character from first level to very high levels, and who are some of your favorite PCs?
Ooh.
I open that up to you guys. I've expounded on that enough.
I don't think I've really brought many characters up that high.
Neither have I.
I got 8th level is the highest I've been.
I think 14.
I did once, but unfortunately we were playing with a Monty Hall GM, so I really can't count it. But it was a fun character to play. I was playing a woman traveling alone who pretended to be a half-wit so people would leave her alone. So I spent a lot of time doing really stupid stuff. And this actually started out as a character I played in a LARP, and I then migrated it into the D&D game we were playing.
Right.
And it's amazing how much people will totally ignore you if you are inexplicably strange. Not so much nowadays, though, because everybody's
strange. That's how I used to ride the bus. Yeah. People left me alone a lot. And he says, I enjoy the show. Thanks, and keep up the good work, Joe Falk.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, Joe. And those are the emails we have. Don't forget to write us at saver.podcast@gmail.com.
Excellent. All right, let's head into DM Fiat for this week.
Nope. Sorry.
What?
Nope, you're wrong. Look it up.
I don't have to look it up. It's common knowledge.
Nope. No!
Yeah. So after that long sigh,
I don't know why I'm just in a mood for sighing today. It's really not a commentary on anything. I don't know. It's just like
it's
I keep forgetting to breathe or something.
Julie doesn't like us.
Hey, I'm in tsunami territory.
Ah, that's right, Seattle, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, actually, we're not. We're like 100 miles in from the coast. We're totally protected by an entire spit of land.
But still,
we get to bitch about it.
She has
what are we talking about? Torches?
She has post-traumatic stress from it.
You betcha. Something like that.
Yeah, torches. Distance and length. How long could you let them light for? Uh-huh. What are your house rules on torches, Glenn?
I don't have any.
No, you don't really care about them? You just let them go as they go?
Well, I said, do you have any torches? Okay, fine, we're cool. And I try to make as many dungeons well-lighted as possible, but there are some that's going to be really dark, so it's like, how many torches you got? 10? You're good.
Well, okay. According to the rules for BX, a torch can go 30-foot radius, and for 1 hour, which is 6 game turns before it burns out. That's the official rules for it. Now, I've known some people to shorten that, lengthen that, not care about how long it burns for, just to be like, okay, your torch goes out now. Or how long?
Well, as a player, instead of torches, I make sure I have, like, a bullseye lantern or something.
True.
So I don't have to mess with, like, holding a torch and stuff. And, you know, you can always put that on your backpack and stuff if you have to fight or something.
Then you can't see in front of you.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'd explain, but it'd take a rocket scientist to how I do it.
Well, so, okay, a lantern burns one flask of oil for 24 hours, for 4 hours, excuse me. 24, yeah.
I was going to say 24 hours. That's
one of those.
Fun, isn't it?
24 turns, 4 hours, giving light in a 30-foot radius. They could be shuttered to prevent the light from being seen to protect the flame from strong winds. That's the official rules.
Yeah, and then I've got torches burn continuously for 6 turns before burning out.
And that's what the home says?
No, that's I'm reading Lavinfold right now. Oh, my home's book is on my shelf. I don't want to go get it. Because I'm lazy.
I do various and sundry things to keep light around. Like I said, a dungeon or a mage with a light spell or something, some kind of magic.
Yeah, I don't really particularly care much about torches or light. I know someone asked this question, so I wanted to throw it in here. But when we did the Book of Sorrows, Crispy, do we really ever worry about light? No, right?
Not really. It's like, do we have torches? Yes.
And it was just...
We can see.
Yeah, you can see.
How many humanoids were in the game?
2 or 3.
Okay, so the rest...
Humanoids or humans?
Dwarves, elves.
Oh, we have 2 dwarves. Yeah, we have 2 dwarves and an elf.
Okay, so the rest of the party needs...
Now, do you guys allow people with InfraVision to still be able to use it while in the light, or do you go by the rules of saying that it's canceled out?
I go by the rules that say it's canceled out.
Are you saying it blinds
them? It doesn't blind them, but you know how dwarves and have the InfraVision or something? It doesn't work when they're in the torchlight.
Oh, yeah. You're saying the InfraVision would say that the light goes, 30-foot radius, but he sees 60-foot. So, yeah, I would restrict it to the 30-foot radius when he's in the light.
Right. If he's in the light, his InfraVision doesn't work. If he steps out of the light...
It's like glare, you know?
Well, it's have you ever been out at night, you know, running around with a lantern, and then, you know, look around outside the lantern light?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm the only one. No,
it's all shadows. But,
yeah.
I have electricity where I
live. I've done a lot of nighttime LARPing, dude.
Oh, I was going to say, let's talk to Julie about why she's running around with a lantern at night.
Yeah. So. Well, like, I live in Vegas, so it's never really dark anywhere.
You know, it doesn't bother me. I dated a Wiccan, so it doesn't really surprise me or bother me that she'd be running around with a lantern outside.
But seriously, it's for me, when I deal with light sources in a game, more often than not, I'll only have it run out if it's dramatically appropriate. I mean, I know that sounds like a GM cop-out, but it's really not because it's if they fail to keep noticing it. I mean, I assume that that's one of those things that falls under the category of we would just do it.
Yeah.
If your torch is starting to go out, you would just light a new one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. In another game, West End Star Wars D6, they say blasters run out of energy when you say they do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when it's dramatically appropriate. Han Solo runs out of blaster when something's coming at him. Okay, fine. You know, and not before.
Yeah.
So that's usually the way I treat. You're right, Julie. That's the way I treat torches.
I would, yeah, like, so mm-hmm. I was going to say, I would just keep track of, like, when they have to light a new torch, but I wouldn't be like, your torches go out. I'd be like, okay, everyone, mark off another torch. And then if they mm-hmm. run out of torches, then, okay, you're boned.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would usually, if even if I'm just generally keeping track, they'll get a heads up. It'll be like, oh, you notice you're down to your last torch.
Dun, mm-hmm. dun, dun.
Well, you would. I mean, it's the kind of thing that, you know, oh, hey, you're down to the last matches in your matchbook, you know. I mean, it's the kind of thing people do notice when they're relying on it.
I kind of remember some of the early basic modules where they didn't want to deal with light, so they do, well, there's this glowing moss all over mm-hmm. the place.
Yeah.
So you can see to hit him or something.
That's what I did with Book of Sorrows. I just said there's natural, some type of natural light in the dungeon. You just don't know where it's coming from.
Yeah
it's a phosphorescent, like, mushrooms and stuff like that. I think is neat because it adds to, like, that whole underworld, strange, like, yeah. new realm theme.
Plus, I didn't want to deal with torches and lanterns, so.
Yeah.
I have to admit, over in my drama that I'm writing, Myriad, there's some of that going on where they just don't know where the light's coming from. But there's a whole other section that's completely in the dark. So I'm trying not to comp out entirely.
And you run a train through there. No.
It's interesting because, like, in if I'm playing classic D&D, I'm going to just, you know, like, keep track of, okay, you burn through a torch now. You can't see because he's, you know, beyond the 30 feet. But in my like, D&D 3.5 or Pathfinder games, I actually track where light is shed and stuff like that because I'm kind of just being an a-hole and it gives them, like, -2 penalties and mischances and stuff like that. So lighting is more important to me in those games. But in like, basic classic D&D, if you have a torch, you can see.
Yeah, pretty much. Now, fighting with torches. Do you guys... I know I do this. So you have a chance to drop it and the torch goes out.
Make the torch go out unless the floor is, like, wet because, you know, it's pitch. It's like a tar wrapped around a stick. So it's still going to burn.
Yeah. To me, the chance of torch going out depends on the nature of the monster they're fighting. If they have a distinct advantage in the dark, the torch doesn't go out all that much. Hmm. I mean, if the monster does, rather.
Another thing, though, that which is one of those little background storytelling things that doesn't come into play very often, is the idea that you might have substandard pitch or somebody ripped you off and your torches start going out a lot faster than you would have expected.
I would only do that once, but that is an interesting idea. Like, I would do it just
to mess.
Well, they
could have got a whole shipment of bad torches, and you watch them trying to cope with these bad torches while they're down in the dungeon. There's always people who are going to rip you off by selling you substandard stuff, and we never do play that.
2 years ago in winter, Becky bought a rick of wood they said was seasoned, and it wasn't. It's like, oh, we got a whole rick of wood standing out there and can't use it. That kind of thing?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I thought.
There's always people like that, and it's one of those things that you can put in to layer into the game, and that's they could be paying attention. Next time they go buy torches, they're going to pay attention.
Yeah.
Like, have them just run for, like, half as long.
Yeah, or just go out, like, an hour before they expect them to, and that way you're just slowly shortening, because they're like, okay, we're going to spend... 10 hours down, we're going to spend, X amount of hours down there. We want 5 torches. And it turns out, they're going to have to come back 5 hours earlier than they thought.
Yes.
Yes.
So that's.
But it also means that they're nearly an entire torch in before they notice.
Ooh. Run for the hills.
Yeah. So that's your torches, distance and length, how we do it. I just want to hear how other people do torches, how they handle it. What do they actually tick off a counter? They sit there and count the numbers in their mind,
Yes.
Well, I know certain DMs that do that. They'll just sit there, and when you're wandering around a dungeon, they'll be like, 1, 2, 3. And they'll just, like, do one of those things.
Yeah.
It seems more logical to just, okay, they're going in at X hour, they have X amount of hours. At this point in time, when we hit this point, it'll go out, and then you just think of it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to sit there, timing it. saying, okay, they've been a week in the dungeon, they can use X amount of torches. What about the monsters who follow the party by the torches they leave behind?
Just that's thought a good of that, idea.
You know?
Yeah.
Like the gelatinous cube slowly coming towards you?
No, the gelatinous fast. Cube closing
fast. Yeah.
Oh, no!
Ah! Chris, we ran already.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, something like an ogre or something, or a bugbear is like, you know, there's a bugbear behind us, and he's got all these torches he's picked up that we left. Uh-oh.
That's why you always police your torches.
Yes.
Well, people do forget, you know, torches don't actually burn down to nothing.
They could. There's... Or they just, the smolder, if they smolder, they'll attract whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I just pulled up our webpage to get the phone number off, and there's a picture of Viggo, the villain from Ghostbusters 2, staring me in the face.
For that article
that the Secret GM wrote for villains, he has a picture of him up there.
Viggo the Carpathian.
The Scourge. Anyway, you can call us 570-290-7283 for our hotline.
Oh, yeah.
Where Julie is standing by to take your call.
Talk to me.
In fishnet nylons.
Ooh.
Oh, Thorky.
I didn't say I was wearing them on my legs.
Oh, Thorky, you listened? Sorry.
Anyway, let's move on to DM Workshop now.
Gentlemen, we can rebuild him.
But this isn't science. It's more like black magic.
Better. Stronger. Faster.
Oh, yeah. It's all coming together. Welcome to the Dungeon Master's Workshop.
So in the workshop, yeah, I was waiting for Glenn to ask for a tool.
Can I have a crispy? No.
Wow, crispy? If you want to.
I love crispy. He lives in Vegas.
Was someone just drinking a Slurpee, or?
Damn.
We love crispy. Oh, okay, maybe not love, but we like you in a romance way.
He's over there on Julie's shoulder crying away. I'm so sorry, Crispy.
You're a meanie.
No, I deserve to have a sigh.
You're a meanie. Anyway, designing, according to my notes, a thieves' guild, because I misspelled it on the notes. I don't think anybody noticed that.
Well, it's not MedUSA, so okay, yeah, I didn't notice it.
The MedUSA one.
I had totally forgotten about that.
He was looking up MedUSA. I'm like, what a dope.
I'm right here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Designing a thieves' guild. Now, this is a lot of role play and a lot of background going here. So, Have you guys ever designed a thieves' guild? Because I think I've designed it maybe once. And generally, I'll just maybe put like a person in charge and have a few lackey thieves and have them inside of a town. Maybe I would write up their purpose for being in the town because maybe they're trying to control the stores and do the whole, you know, protection type thing like the mob would do.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I've done for a thieves' guild in town. What have you done, Chris?
The thieves' guild is actually a major part of my next campaign that I'm running right now. So I've had to go and, like, between sessions, I'll scope out what they've done, like what progress they've made or what setbacks they've done. But other than that, like, I usually just think Thieves Guild is a den of it's almost like a cantina in Star Wars where you've got all these outlaws.
A hive of scum and villainy.
Yeah, but most of them are secret, though.
Most of them are secret, yeah. Or like, I hate to bring this up, the D&D movie, the Thieves Guild.
Richard O'Brien rocks. He was the one. In that movie.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but like that's how I kind of I think they ended up.
Give me the rod. No, I'm sorry.
Give me the rod.
Okay.
Oh, I think the Iron must have been picking scenery out of his teeth for weeks.
He was. He was just like eating it.
He was. He really, really looked like he was on some kind of drugs.
He is having so much fun in that movie. It's great.
Yes.
I recently read a DVD review of both D&D 1 and 2 movies, and the guy actually liked the first one better.
Well, the first one is a lot better than the second one.
I haven't seen the second one.
I've seen most of the second one, and I thought it was better, but...
The second one's like a made-for-TV...
Sci-fi movie.
Yeah, like I made it in my backyard with Sci-Fi's money or something like that.
Yeah, I'm not going to watch that.
Then again, both of them got better reviews than the Dragonlance movie. anyway.
Well, they're making a third one now. Wizards of the Coast just signed off on it.
The Book of Vile Darkness.
Yeah.
Are they ripping you off, Vince? No, that's Quest for the Book of Sorrows. That's right.
Well, the Book of Vile Darkness is an artifact from D&D lore.
D&D lore.
That's true. Anyway, Thieves Guild.
Let's get back to Thieves Guild.
Fin Fei Foom. Come on. Okay.
So, the question a lot of times when you're doing a Thieves Guild, I mean, at least I've found, is, you know, there has to be motivation for thieves to join it. It's not like Aflac where it's going to be paying their bills if they can't get hurt on the job. And you have to have, well, I mean, because a lot of times the motivation is Aflac. Muscle.
I just like to play RuneQuest just to have a duck go through there and go, Aflac. Anyway.
But there's got to be some reason for it. I actually, the times that I've done something like that, have modeled it, of all things, on if... Are you familiar at all with the Three Penny Opera?
No. Oh, yeah.
No.
Oh, yeah.
The Beggar's Guild in there, which is...
McKeith and all them.
Oh, yeah, it is. There's a lot of good stuff in there for the concept of a underground criminal organization that's a little bit funny on the you know, light humorous side, but at the same time, there is, because one of the songs in it is the King of the Beggars basically setting everybody up with their jobs for the day and telling them, okay, you're going to fake like you don't have any legs and go over here. And
let me give you another literary example, another good one. Hunchback of Notre Dame, The Court of Miracles.
Mm.
That would be a nice little thieves guild for a D&D world. Thieves and beggars.
Mm.
Which is one of something instead of thieves.
I think the whole beggars guild thing would fit reasonably well inside one of the functions of a thieves guild. Like,
yeah.
It's not just like skullduggery and high adventure. It can be like these mundane pickpocketing thieves as well. But
yeah. Oh yeah. Well, and with the Beggar's Guild, it could be your retirement plan, Aflac. I mean, you get too old. Your fingers start to get gnarled, whatever. So they put you out to beg instead.
Yeah.
But at least you have backup.
Former beggar.
I think one thing that does a Thieves Guild rather well is the Elder Scrolls games.
Really?
Yeah. So, like, in Oblivion, you have, like, the Thieves Guild of Cyrodiil, and their leader is this mysterious figure called the Grey Fox. And, like, the functions, you get your, you know, you get your fences, and you get your, you can pay off your fines and bounties and stuff like that, and I think those are really good functions. And then they also provide you with targets and places to, like, case.
Yeah.
So it kind of is this multifaceted, you know, it has all these different functions that you provide. Right. They just take a little bit of a cut.
See, as a DM, that's what I would have fun with, would be the more, like, bureaucratic side of the Thieves Guild. Because you know about thieves and cutthroats and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, they got a guild hall. They got a guild call that they have to go to, which is probably secret, but that's when they get jobs and they have to fill a pay. Who knows? Maybe they got a 401k plan in there. Who knows?
They become beggars.
Yes, that's their 401k. You're right. Yeah,
go ahead.
No, good. No, I'm done.
Oh, well, the other side of it, of course, is that, and this would, a thieves guild would really only exist in a larger city where there is enough work for everyone. I mean, you're not going to find your 2400 farming town, you know. But
so you wouldn't find like an extension of the other, the big city's thieves guild, like local number 146 or something.
No, I think
because most people guild, who are any good, would gravitate to the big city.
Yeah, it would be more. It's more of a metropolis center kind of thing. Or if you're doing, if you're doing more like an Elder Scrolls kind of thing, you're covering a kingdom.
Uh-huh. Mm.
So you go to these different towns within the kingdoms and steal from them. But like, I always think of Conan, where you have
the talk
you
show,
know, like.
Oh, sorry.
You Conan. You mean the
Conan?
Barbarian.
Okay, because Conan's a TV show, so.
Where like he...
I keep seeing that and hoping it's gonna be no.
Yes, Crispy.
Conan the new movie.
Oh yeah.
Something.
Yeah. But, like, so you have, like, these different districts, and, like, there are multiple thieves, and there are, like, thieves' dens. And, but, like, Conan never goes to, like, small fishing village to steal stuff. And, like, the thieves' guilds are always centered in these big cities.
Right.
Well, yeah.
Well, it's partly because there's nothing to steal in the outlying districts unless you're going to a, you know, big old castle. But also mm-hmm. because there's no place to sell what you've stolen. You're not going to be walking up to Joe Blow Farmer and go, hey, I've got this diamond tiara, you want it?
Yeah, which is where like the fences come in, which is yeah. something mm-hmm. a guild can provide.
Which could be
right.
A,
the,
yeah.
the downside, though, of being a guild member, of course, would be that you would be answerable to them. If they say, we need somebody to go out to this place, yep, it's haunted, but too bad, there's something we have to recover there, then suddenly you don't have a choice. And that's... Yeah. where the story hooks come in.
It's true. And also, if the Thieves Guild gets big enough and influential enough in a big enough city, you start dealing with a situation like the five families and the mafia and stuff like that. You have to divide it up. Well,
The BBC show I was watching recently, Robin Hood, I don't know if anybody's uh-huh. seen that or not.
I remember watching a couple episodes. It was pretty good, from
yeah,
what I remember.
Not bad show, but what they had dealt with was a Thieves Guild that was going into a local town and just... demanding things from the town to keep the people alive, so maybe that's another idea.
They were running like a protection racket?
Yeah, protection racket is, I mean, that's taking yeah. it into more of the organized crime. I mean, a thieves' guild per se, I would think that most of them would like to keep a low profile, and they probably have all sorts of contacts in the local guard or whatever you call your policing force.
Well, on a base level, Thieves Guild is organized crime.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's no reason that these two concepts have to be mutually exclusive.
Yeah, but once you start doing the protection thing, if anybody does speak up, then you're crushed. As long as you're just doing the occasional stealing, police will sometimes, you know, turn a blind eye. But when you start getting into bigger things is when you tend to have somebody has to take notice.
Hmm.
Well, okay. like... I think that if
sorry,
the Thieves
I'm
Guild
overanalyzing.
Is, yeah, if the Thieves Guild is big and powerful enough, they can very closely resemble a life mob where they'll have payouts and buy-offs and stuff like that
yeah.
to have people look the other way. So then you get kind yeah. of a Gotham City kind of thing going where
and
like
which,
maybe
and
the PCs
could,
have to be Batman.
Yeah, and then you know they could even extend even further into like the gambling, which makes it even mm-hmm. more mafia-like.
Hmm.
Like, these models of the Thieves Guild, they can both exist, I think, in a fantasy world pretty reasonably.
Yeah. Also, oh, yeah. How do things like, I don't know if this should be separate or they should be rivals, how do the Assassin's Guilds fit into that? Would that be a subset or a rival?
Well, there really weren't many assassins in Basic, except for, I think, the Brown Book had an assassin class.
Mm-hmm.
But I would think they would just go with the Thieves Guild.
Yeah, but killing for hire could be... either be part of the Thieves Guild repertoire or a separate organization.
Yeah. I think
part of that's going to depend on the ideology involved. I mean, that sounds like a weird word to use with thieves and assassins and stuff, but if you think about some of the examples like the, you know, the classic ninja concept, there's a whole lot more involved than just picking up a sword and stabbing somebody with it. So anytime you get ideology involved, that's going to make a difference in how different groups interact.
Yeah, I agree. Like, you can have, like, the honor among thieves thing where, like, these thieves won't kill anyone. But then you can have a totally different type of thieves guild where, you know, they're just cutthroat bastards who take no prisoners and have no mercy. And if you try to obstruct them in their mission, they're going to kill you. Mm-hmm. Or you can have, like, the thieves guild where they're like, oh, we are trying to keep a low profile. So, you know, if the guards come... run and try to be stealthy. But I think like it works either way. You can have assassins as part of a thieves guild, or you can have a separate assassins guild. And then like those assassins would hire themselves out to different people, and they might all like it would be like a loose structure like a bardic college where like these assassins belong to a quote unquote guild, And, like, they have certain loyalties to that. But, like, they're not just waiting around for people to murder, like, contracts to come in. They're working for a lord. Almost like, you know, like a historical ninja.
But then again, you're talking about honor amongst thieves. I think those kind of organizations last a lot longer than the total domination chaotic types you were talking about.
Yeah, with the honor amongst thieves, as long as you've got... As long as everybody enforces it, everybody in the organization is like, okay, you screw over Bob, we're going to shun you. Suddenly we're going to turn you into the police. All the evidence is going to show up in your house.
Yeah, like, and I think that's a really great concept to have for your thieves guild. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I figured somebody in the hierarchy of the thieves guild has got to be lawful. Just to, you know, okay... Let's set some rules here so we don't, like, you know, stab each other in the back and then that's the thieves guild, you know?
Yeah, well, because it is a guild. I mean, it is organized in some way. There's some kind of collective, like, thought behind it to help everyone benefit. And I think that whole, if you stab someone in the back, you're going down thing is just a great rule of thumb to have for your thieves guild.
It's a great deterrent, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it also sets up the concept for the character to be not the type who, you know, shanghais their own party members because they've been brought up or, you know, put together with this concept of you don't shit where you eat.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, the fighter and the wizard are kind of my bread and butter. They help make it easier for me to get into places so I can make more money and steal better things. Why would I want to screw those people over?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We throw it back to Vince. What about you?
About what? No, I'm kidding.
On Thieves Guild.
What's your best organization for Thieves Guild?
I basically told in the beginning. I mean, I don't do really any major detail for it.
Okay.
Just pretty much a leader, a couple lackeys, and their reason for being there is all I really do. Just in case a thief wants to go seek out something like that for information or for help. I don't really get into too much detail like you guys are really getting into.
Yeah. I think we're looking for.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, I was gonna say I think it's a really neat concept because the Thieves Guild can be this really modular, multifaceted kind of organization. You can have different types of thieves guilds that operate in different parts of the world or in different cities that might be warring, and they have their own way of doing things. So I think it's there's a lot of depth there that you can add. Yeah. And you don't really have to put so much forth. Like, into the player's knowledge, but I think it's nice to have his background information.
Well, and it also depends on whether you're looking to have your players directly interacting with it or whether it's just going to be an existing thing in the world. Mm-hmm. If you have a lot of players who want to play thieves, having a fleshed-out thieves guild is also a way to kind of control them if they're dumbasses. Because, you know, as long as they understand the fact that, you know, you're not just dealing with these guys here who you're traveling with, you're dealing with your people back home. And if you don't treat these guys right, word's going to get back and you're going to be shafted.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. Word of mouth is the best deterrent I can think of. Shall we throw it open to the people out there?
Yeah, why not?
Okay.
Oh, I thought you were throwing it for me, Glenn.
I am getting ready to do that. Saber.podcast@gmail.com. Let us know about your thieves guilds.
Or 570-290-7283.
Or the Dragon's Foot forums under the classic D&D subsection.
You'll see Save or Die. Or you can email Crispy at crispy.cri... No, don't go there.
Or did you know we have t-shirts? Anyway.
Yeah. We have t-shirts.
Might as well plug everything while we're at it.
Why not? We have t-shirts.
ScareMe.com.
Yeah. Go to the website and click on Sod Swag, and you can see our two t-shirts. One designed by Glenn, and the other designed by DM Corey of the Thecko's Hammer podcast. And each of them show Julie wearing the t-shirt in a nice fashion. No, I'm just kidding.
See this.
No, I'm kidding.
So do I.
In a nice fashion.
Yes.
Ooh.
I won't say how, but, you know, now it's going to like 1,000 hits going to be on the website just looking for Julie in a t-shirt, Julie in a t-shirt.
I think we should
have a burlap sack and put it up there.
Glenn, you could draw.
I already posted my armor. Isn't that enough?
Yeah, full plate. Julie in full plate.
Nobody likes full plate.
In her bar winch outfit.
Yeah.
All right, let's go into random encounters.
We take what we want and leave the rest. Just like your salad bar.
Nothing up my sleeve. Presto!
You will come out no more.
What? Huh? What'll come out no more?
Random encounters.
So random encounters this week.
Yeah.
We have the infamous, scary Cyclops.
That's an eyeful, let me tell you.
Oh, wow.
I didn't really think about that.
Does that mean it's a tower?
Next week we're going to be covering Wolverine and the Phoenix.
And the rest.
And the rest. So Cyclops.
Just all kinds of beasts, you know.
Jill, you have any mythological background on the Cyclops?
Well, of course, it's from, you know, classic Greek mythology and the... Oh, Lord. There were... They appeared a number of times, but the most standard one you hear about is Polyphemus, who appeared in the... which one did he appear in? I can never keep the Odyssey and the Iliad straight. But anyway, they were creatures that were not just... They were around forever, from what I recall. Mm-hmm. They were almost not quite gods, but they were sort of up there with the gods as far as age and being around forever. But they were, just as often as not, they were just like hung out and herded goats.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They raised sheep and grapes for some reason.
They raped grapes?
They did what?
They raised sheep and they made...
Oh, raised!
Oh,
raised.
They raped did you? Grapes.
Yeah, I thought, like... I thought you guys were thinking they raped sheep, which is just...
I was going to say, that's...
I said Scotland. Raised.
Got it.
It's friggin'...
I love Scotland. That's an old joke. Not.
I was
going to
say... Yeah, I was going to say Welsh Cyclops, but...
I always wondered where Angus Beef came from.
Well, the Cyclops are known for being stupid as well, according to...
They are. And their single, you know, the thing that makes them a Cyclops is the fact that they have one eye. I mean, that's where the word comes from and everything. It's just...
So if they had two, they'd be a Spicyclops?
They'd be a Biclops.
A Biclops. Yeah. If they had two, they might very well be a person.
Yeah. A giant at that point.
True, because they were of a very large stature.
Yeah, but in D&D, they're linked in with giantkin, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, in mythology, they're part of the race of primordial giants as well.
Mm-hmm. Got
it. So, like, they've always been giants.
Well, they're 20 foot tall, so.
Yeah. That's pretty big, I guess.
Yeah.
You know.
And they there's a 5% chance, according to the Cook book, that it can cast a curse. And I like the fact that it says the DM decides what the curse is.
Really? Oh, people should listen to last week's episode.
Yep.
Yeah, you could have come up with some really nice ones.
So,
my curse, you'd have only one eye. That would probably be the obvious curse.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? In Metzer, I am not finding a Cyclops.
It's probably in the...
squint.
They're a 13 hit die creature, so it's probably going to be in...
Companion, probably.
Companion, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's
possible. It might be an expert, depending on what level the mentor goes up to for
well,
expert.
You know what I'm looking at, and it's not in here.
Well, stop looking at that stupid book and look at the real books.
Well, if I had the real books, I would. but no, it's got...
Help us give little Glenn the real books.
Call in now for a penny today can save Glenn for the rest of the week of his life.
We're having a telethon later this month. They'll be manning the phones. Yes,
for the underprivileged.
Glenn, the first step for recovery is admitting you have a problem.
Yeah, his name's Vince.
Oh.
Anyway.
No. So folks, say goodbye to Glenn as this is his last appearance on Zoom.
Thank you, Mr. Godfrey.
I'll miss you, Glenn.
I love you, Vince, anyway. Anyway, be nice or I won't show you my pinned down book. Anyway, no, I don't find it in here. So in Cook... You said there are 13 hit dice?
Yeah,
hit die creature.
It's in the Marsh Cook. It's probably in Labyrinth Lord as well.
It is in Labyrinth Lord.
And I wish that someone had a Holmes book and they can look that up for us.
Okay, I'm going to go get my Holmes book. It's, I don't think Cyclops is going to be in there, though.
No, you're
it's
right.
It's too,
powerful. I mean, it's number of pairing, a D4. It's got armor class 5, 13 hit dice. It does 3d10 damage.
Well, it's actually...
Yeah, Cyclopses did tend to run in groups. I mean...
Actually, they do.
Only Femus aside.
They usually fight with a wooden club, and they said they're usually loners. But they are they can be known to run in groups.
Yeah, I have typically are loners as well, I think is written in here. Let me see.
Okay.
Cyclops are loners and generally live together in small numbers only on occasion.
And that might simply be because we want them to be able to be defeated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, the cool thing about this is because they have the one eye, they have reduced depth perception.
Yeah.
So Labyrinth Lord listed as a -2 penalty to attack rolls.
This also listed the same way. But yeah, negative on all 2-hit rolls.
Yeah. And they also they throw rocks up to 200 feet for 3d6 points of damage.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing that's probably going to work as a catapult.
But apparently they miss a lot.
Yeah.
So that depth perception throwing is a bad idea.
It's that imperial marksmanship.
Well, I mean, a 13-hit die creature, if you're setting it up against a lower-level party, is probably going to hit. Let's see here. 13 hit die. Yeah, it can hit anyone with AC 0 less than 50% of the time.
Huh, really?
Mm-hmm.
That kind of makes it actually a very functional villain because it's huge, but they have a chance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're looking at to hit, let's go 13 hit die. You're looking at probably 15 to hit a party that's adequately equipped. Which is not bad. Like, it's a pretty fair chance.
I could see this being used as, like, the monster in, you know, the mountains that all the villagers are afraid to go to, and they hire party to go and kill the monster, and you find out, like, the Cyclops is just some lonely, poor, pathetic creature, like, you know, the Beauty and Beast creature, you know.
Yeah, like, maybe he kidnaps a beautiful maiden, and, like, they get to know each other, and the maiden doesn't want to go because she, like, loves his sensitive soul. I think a Cyclops would be a really good, adventure big bad. But, like, don't make him evil, because, you know, they don't have to be evil.
Make him seem like he's evil, but actually he's just really trying to get along in society.
And he's got to have a goofy voice.
I am Cyclops!
So he's kind of like Shrek, almost.
Kind of, yeah. I could see, like, very Shrek kind of thing going on with this.
Okay, just for Vince, I looked up Cyclops in Metzer. And it pretty much falls in line with what you have. 13 hit dice, curses, and all that.
What's the percent for a curse? 5% as well?
It is, 5%.
Okay.
Yeah. Labyrinth Lord doesn't give a percentage. It just says a few Cyclops have the ability to issue a curse one time per week. In the same manner as the reverse of remove curse.
Uh-huh.
Huh. So it's really up to DM discretion.
That's weird.
It's amazing how much falls down to DM discretion.
Well, that's how they did it back in the olden days.
The way it should be.
The good way to do it.
Yeah. Not like, where's the rule on page 27 of the DM's guide? And
yeah, I hate that.
All those 4E people sound like that, don't they?
Yes.
Oh my god, I watched 4E being played earlier this week, and I... it's like, what game? This is not D&D.
No.
Part of the problem is you're getting people coming from things like computer games where there is no fudging the rules, ever.
Yeah, you can't. You just can't.
But it just doesn't exist, and therefore they just don't even think about trying to debate things.
Yeah, you can't do this, otherwise you get kicked out of the game.
Well, with computer games, it just doesn't happen.
Well.
It's all absolute.
Well.
Yeah.
There are certain ways to cheat in MMOs, and if you get found out, you get thrown out.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, that kind of thing. I was thinking of, you know, healthy debate, not unhealthy, you know, rules cracking.
Yeah.
Yeah, healthy debate. Like, I don't know. I'm, as a DM, I like to have, like, just do it this way. But I'm never like, just do it this way because it's worse for you. And I don't like when DMs do that to me either.
Well, according to page 5 on my PDF in my iPad, it says...
We were playing a game, and they infiltrated a mage's tower, and, one of them got knocked out of a window. Mm-hmm. Or, no, they knocked a mage out of the window, and it was, like, you know, they were doing the Batman and Robin from the 60s climb up the rope on the wall kind of thing. And only one of them had made it in. And she, the character, threw one of the wizards out of the window. And, like, I'm like, okay, this guy's going to die if you don't catch him. So they tried to catch him. I'm like, give me this type of role. And one of them was like, no, it's the rules say it's like this. It's this thing. And I'm like, dude, I'm giving you, like, a very reasonable chance of succeeding and not killing this guy. Why are you debating me?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I don't like that either. That's why most of my games are just like, just do this.
Yeah, like, I'm all for that. Give me, if it's not covered, give me an ability check. Or give me this saving throw.
Did we get off topic again?
No,
we did.
No, we didn't. We were leaving up to DM chance, actually, we were talking about.
Well, one last bit on that is, the one thing that drives me crazy is when a GM makes a rule and I'm like, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense. I'm over here, this is happening, that's over there. There's something between me and him, how can he throw that at me? And they're like, well, he has a chance. It's like, that's where I mean healthy debate, because it's like, if you can explain to me, and if I'm the GM, somebody can explain to me why something simply wouldn't work or simply would work, I'll give him a chance.
Yeah, I'm all for that, too. I don't know everything, you know, like, I will admit this, I don't know everything. You know, and if someone is more knowledgeable, then I'll take their opinion into mind, and then,
so,
you know.
If Frank Mentzer was sitting at the table with you and he argued a rule with you, he'd be like, okay, man, you wrote the book.
Not quite like that. Like, if it's, like, on, like, a trial and near trajectory or something like that, or trilateral trajectory. Like, I don't know everything about archery, but, like, if there's someone who I know is an archer and knows about archery, I'll listen to them. I'll like, have them explain to me why this works this way, and you know, and I'll come up with a way to kind of put that into game mechanics.
So, like, for real-life Cyclops was at the table, you take his advice over, like, say, Julie's advice?
Well, yeah, I mean, the guy, he knows what he's talking about. He only has one eye.
Sorry, Julie.
Yeah, sorry, Julie.
Your way was interesting, but, I mean,
He's got one eye.
He knows from personal experience.
Well, it's like, you know, I would take drumming advice from that guy from Def Leppard, I suppose.
Yeah.
So Julie will sit to the Cyclops right and throw a stone at him because he can't see her because he's only got one eye.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, so Cyclops is, we gave you a couple examples how to use it. We went over it.
Just, in 3D?
Yeah, in 3D. In 3D.
Oh. And as a last note, did anybody see the Cyclops in Crodmandoon?
Yes, I did.
In what?
Crodmandoon and the Flaming Sword.
Oh, Crodmandoon.
The Cyclops in that was hilarious.
When they had the hot tub with him and everything.
Yes.
That show was just strange beyond all belief.
It was so much fun. I mean, yeah. Dumb fun, but fun.
I that's all I had to say. I love the bald guy. That's all I got to say.
Mm-hmm.
I love that the like evil sheriff or king or whatever, I haven't seen the show that much, is the guy from Little Britain.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. I love that guy. He's so funny.
And the mage used to make me laugh. He'd like be like, I ain't doing that. I ain't on the clock. He was like, talking like that and stuff. Anyway, let's get on to Products of Your Imagination.
Your dungeon master has placed you in a dreadfully precarious position.
They're right next to you.
Well, all you do is we play the characters we talked about earlier when we run around and stuff.
I want to show you a trick Mother showed me when you weren't around.
Use your lightning bolt. Victory is yours.
I'm attacking the darkness.
Dungeons & Dragons games. Products of your imagination.
You're not there. You're getting drunk.
So Products of Your Imagination is Julie Size yet again. Is
it's just that kind of day.
Is we have a Thor camera module, X14.
Yay, Thorky.
Which I know myself and Crispy thought it was Atlantis.
I kept reading it as Atlantis.
Yes, we both thought it was that, and Glenn and Julie both laughed at us and said, no. And the proper way is
Mid-USA.
Mid-USA, yeah. One.
Altanus,
the sunken city, which Chris and I both thought it said Atlantis.
It's like sunken city. It's Atlantis.
Oh, all the names in here are clear misspellings of classic mythological names. It's not that surprising.
It's a giant sign on the side of the mountain. It's got Atlantis crossed out, and it says Altatus under it.
No. This is an
right
adventure.
Right next to that, it says Hooliwad.
Yes. Okay, so this adventure is designed for 6 to 9 characters from levels 4 to 8 experience using the Mulvey, Cook, and Marsh rules.
Or
what?
Labyrinth.
Or Labyrinth. Yeah, that's true. You can use Labyrinth for this. And basically the 81 rule set, depending on what you're looking at, you can go with, I think, Micro Light as well, too.
And
so,
knowing basic D&D, you can adapt it to any other basic rule set.
Mm-hmm. Yes, even the one that Glenn doesn't want to talk about.
I do that out of courtesy to you.
So,
Vince, hate rules, Cyclopedia!
So, Atlantis, or Altanis...
It's got Cyclops in the title! Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, it does, you're right. So basically, this, from what I was reading, this is a continuation of X-1, or a piece of X-1, the Isle of Dread, ripped into it, and basically he just expanded upon one of the little small islands, using the example that Frank Mentzer did with his power. I can't think of the name of it offhand. What was that? Arcanium or something? I'm sorry. Frank's listening, probably like, damn you, raising a fist. Anyway. So, the weirdest part of this whole entire adventure, I have to say, is the fact...
Really?
Yeah. What, Julie?
Really weirdest? Okay, I'll wait to hear what you say.
The really weirdest part of this adventure is definitely the use of names in this adventure. And Julie sighs for that one. I don't know what Thorkhammer was thinking with the name Ernesto Garcia Gaiacumus.
That got me a really, really big groan. I was like, really, Thorky? Really? You're doing that?
Oh, so actually, let's go over to Crispy for his rap for this one.
All right. So there's these islands.
Yeah.
And they're very sandboxy.
Yeah.
And there's not like a ton of plot stuff. The end.
But there's pigs.
There are pigs. Yeah.
I do like volcanic activity. Yeah, I do like the setup with the old man when you see him and he makes you roll the dice, but I really don't like the I don't like the chart because you can gain an ability point
halfway to the next experience level. Yeah, if you're a thief and you roll the dexterity thing, you get 2 points of dexterity.
He puts that you can lose XP and drop to the top of the next lower level. Mm-hmm. You could suffer perm damage.
Yeah, so you're always rolling negative one.
You have to wear a perm?
No.
Permanent. You get a permanent ability modifier for damage of negative one.
Permanent. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's like, right, I don't want to do it.
They're called abbreviations. They've been around for a while.
The negatives on this chart, the negative, there's one... Well, there's two negatives, and there's like 6, 8 positives.
Yeah.
That's way tilted out of proportion. I mean, not to mention... Who's gonna sit there and have dice? I mean, if you let it happen to one character, maybe, but you know, one guy's gonna go, man, I feel so much stronger after playing dice with the old dude. You should go play some dice with him.
I think the best way to do it was give them a note of what happens.
I would actually note it on the sheet, note it on my notes, and tell them at the end of the scenario, not tell them where it happened.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah, actually, that's a good idea too.
I like the dice thing. I kind of think of it as like a deck of many things for dummies.
Well, it's 3D6,
it's a drunk
and it's
of many things. It is.
Yeah.
It's a drunk of many things.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Drunk of many things.
A drunk. Okay. Anyway, this guy sends you off on a ship to the islands.
Hey, little girl, I got this island. You want to explore it?
Go ahead, Glenn, continue.
Sent you off there looking for this seer who knows of a sunken city with a whole bunch of treasure in it. And that's pretty much the plot, isn't it?
Yeah, that's probably about it.
It's a very sandboxy kind of thing. It's a short module. Like, it's 17 pages.
You find the seer who's being tormented by harpies. Personally, I'd take the seer right out and put the same guy back in there. Yeah, it was me! What do you think? Anyway, basically, he tells you where the city is. You go fight monsters, collect treasure. Bada bing, bada boom, you're off.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Some of the monsters are a little bit too much, I think.
Yeah, they're really, really powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to crank it in there. My God, you know.
And classical mythology, harpies are just as likely to shit all over your food as they are to eat it.
Yes.
That's how they prevent you from wanting to eat it.
Well, these harpies are just kind of being dicks to this guy.
Yeah.
Like, so maybe they are shitting on his food.
Probably.
I'd love to play it for comedy. I'd love to have, like, play him like Michael Palin. Oh, I would have wished it was...
So, the maps. This adventure is full of maps. It has lots of maps. I mean...
But it has no pictures, and that drives me crazy, because it's got descriptions of, like, these statues, and it's like, oh, yes, they have this, and they look like this. I want a sketch.
I want to see what a sea termite looks like. Sea termites? What the hell is a sea termite?
Now, I'm curious about one of the maps. Like, there's one map, which is the Island 2 Ruins 1.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. It's supposed to be in the, and they're like, the ruins have like a maze to them. If you look at the picture, it's like there's one part of the maze you can't even get into, but it's there.
Yeah, right. The maps are a little disjointed. Like they show up in places where the module was talking about other things.
Yeah,
so it's like here are these maps, but like you're talking about something totally different at this point in time. Like I think. The layout would have been a little bit better if he kept the maps, like, in the back, like most modules do.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. On the plus side, I did like the Mud Men and the Mud Golem.
Mm-hmm.
The overall...
Yeah, the Mud Golem was a nasty trick where you go in and you don't see anything, and then as soon as you pop your head into that area, he just attacks you.
Is that the one where you get your little mud to stone magic going and it turns into a stone golem? No.
Yeah. No. That's why it lives.
Yeah.
But I thought the mud man and the mud golem was a nice touch.
Mm-hmm. A lot of the monsters were really, really tough, though. I guess if you're doing... It was like 6 to how many characters of 4-8th level?
Yeah.
Like 6 to 9.
6 to 9.
Yeah, so it wouldn't have been that bad, but like... You know, you're level 4 and you're taking on 11 hit die creatures.
And the one WTF character that's there is the injured giantess.
No, there's two WTF. I have a WTF of my own. Go ahead.
What's that?
I like the injured giantess.
I have the bones of a hobbit who is actually a dwarf.
Oh, yeah. The hobbit where he said, why is a dwarf carrying him?
Well, yes,
it's
yeah.
It's a hobbit.
But it's like, why the dwarf?
Vigo of the mountain.
You got hobbit?
Vigo of the mountain. I died because of this. Just don't do that. It's like, thank you for that knowledge.
Get rid of 50 and she'll be arg.
Yeah, okay, like, guys. I love the note. It's like, I am Meepo of the mountain. This widow killed me. That is all. You know? Hey?
Arrgh. Maybe he was dictating.
I had this image of this black widow up there with a pen writing the note and slipping it into his hand.
So what was
they're cleverer than that. They'd have written, I've got cool stuff if you hunt underneath me and spend a lot of time with your neck exposed.
what was your WTF, Julie? Oh, you already said it.
No, that was it. It was the hobbit who might be a dwarf.
Oh, okay.
Because
I think that was just an oversight.
Mine was the injured giantess, which I don't think is bad. It's just, I just like, well, okay, how do I handle this guy? How do I handle this encounter? I guess befriend.
All right, so let's go around. Crispy, what are your overall thoughts and rating?
Thorky, don't hate me. Like, you're a very good guy. I just didn't really like your module. I'm going to give it a 2. And I would probably not play it.
Wow. So if I brought this out as a module to play, you'd be like, no, I'm leaving?
Well, I would do that. It needs some
You're not
going to
say
work.
This is Ravenloft and I'm leaving?
Ravenloft? Ugh! it's just, it was a little weird for me, because like, it was like centered on like these ancient fish people, and it was very sandboxy. It needed more direction, I think.
I think there needs to be an underlying plot. I mean, something more than just go get treasure, like, there's something that must be recovered from here.
Whoa. First you're saying it's a sandbox, and now you're saying you need direction.
Well, I'm saying there needs to be a goal other than just...
All right, hold on. Save that for your turn. Crispy, now give me your rating. 2, right?
2.
2 and you'd probably get rid of it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, Thorky.
Senor Glenn.
I give it 3. Okay. I'd play it because I could play it for laughs, and I think it would be a hoot.
Yeah, the cartoon aspect to it, huh?
Yeah, if you see just the right angle, this could be a real hoot. and also like take like half the lethality of the monsters out of there.
All right, so rating.
3.
Okay, and you keep it. You play it. Okay, Julie. Yeah.
I'd give it a 2 because I can't see working it into the average campaign. I mean, how many people? I mean, it's like, oh well, we could go off this way and be on our way to someplace else that we know of, or we can go off into the middle of the ocean on a boat. And who's going to drive the boat? Do we have the boat? Do we keep the boat? Does it drop us off and come back for us later? There's too many logistical things involved. But also, just in general, it seems very aimless. We're just wandering around hoping a goat will poo some gold.
Yeah. And well, there's a lot of treasure in this module.
There's a lot of treasure, but there's a lot of monsters. The one thing that actually kind of intrigues me more than anything else is that the city is actually only 15 to 30 feet underwater. I mean, you could conceivably, as long as you bring your own dinghy, you could be floating over and just do some little dives down there without having to be able to breathe water. And but I would like to see that portrayed more in the writing to give the GM more of an idea of how to run that.
You know, the way he described that plateau and the mountains and the water and the high tide and all that, I kept getting the image of the movie The Abyss. Especially near the end when that whole thing rose up.
Yeah.
See, I think kind of like a The Lost World kind of thing with, you know, like X1, The Isle of Dread. That's always, to me, like very kind of a Jules Verne, okay. Journey to the Center of the Earth, or Lost World
kind of thing.
I think
that's what he was aiming for.
Yeah, that's what he was aiming for. And what would you rate this, what, Julie, again?
I'd say a 2. I just don't feel there's enough flesh here to really run with.
And Crispy, hold on.
Sorry.
And all the names being total ripoffs of mythology kind of gets on my nerves, because like you, I read, you know, you see it, like Altanus, you think Atlantis, you see Minui, you think Minoa, you see, oh, what was the other one? Kraken, so that's a Kraken.
Yeah.
There's an E in it, not an O. You know, I
noticed that one.
Yeah.
How about you, Big Vince?
And of course, and what is the race here? The thinly veiled piranha.
Yeah.
What is it? The Prunara or whatever?
Yeah. Prunara, yeah.
Pruhana. The Pruhanas.
Well, so Julie gives it a 2, and she would probably not play it or play it.
Probably not.
Okay. I'm going to give this a 3, because I think Thor Kammer did a good job in writing it, and he always fills it up with a lot of information. A little weird on the names, as we saw, but I think he did that on purpose for reasons like dopes like me and Crispy saying, oh, Atlantis, and buy the module.
It's more confusing than it is useful.
Yeah. The maps, I don't like at all. I think they're poorly written, drawn. I think I know he didn't do them, someone else did, but they could have done a better job at it. Yeah,
and a few pictures would have really helped to give some kind of a feel for the setting.
Well,
yeah. Monsters.
Well, you have to understand that he probably didn't have access to a lot of artists for this, so.
This is pre-Corey, yeah.
I mean, it's hard. If you find an artist, it's hard to get them to be like, hey, could you do a picture of this for me and then a picture of that without them saying, where's my money?
Yeah.
I could say so. Anyway.
So
I don't have that problem.
So you would give it a 3.
Yeah.
Got a 2 for Crispy, and how many for Julie again?
2.
2.
Two and a half?
Yeah, I'd say 2.5. 2 and 3/4 maybe? Yeah, 2.5. It's called 2.5.
Like, I think this module works really good as a setting. Like, it is sandboxy, but I think if you threw an overlapping plot onto it, I think it would be good. Yeah. I think it would be a 4. Yeah.
And get rid of
it. Yeah. As far as a side adventure or a way home adventure for Isle of Dread, sure.
Yeah.
Get rid of that chart in the beginning, too, with the old man with the dice.
Yeah, that's pretty powerful. And I would personally cut down some of that treasure. Because you get a lot, and you get a lot of magic items.
Yeah, it's if there was something like, oh, the so-and-so's daughter's been kidnapped, and they're tied in or somewhere on the island, or there's an item specifically to recover. Just something to be not just wandering around aimlessly, hack, hack, clink, 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 hack, hack, clink, clink, clink.
So with Ding. A little direction and a little bit more of an underlying plot, this could be really a good adventure, and maybe taking the city
base.
Of Altanis or Atlantis, whatever you want to call it, and putting it further under the water.
No, I actually liked it being that close to the surface. I thought that was very interesting.
Oh, all right.
It's like adventuring in tide pools.
This would be a perfect setting.
It makes it surprisingly accessible and yet at the same time inaccessible. Diving 15 feet is no joke.
No.
I mean, free diving. But it's not impossible. And that way, you've got players could be trying to access things, but they're going to be severely hampered if they're not able to do water breathing and stuff.
Yeah.
But it's not impossible. So you could encourage them to be stupid and drown.
All right. So that's going to be the adventure for this week as we're heading down the highway.
Sure.
Looking
for adventure. And Glenn, what are you running away from this week?
Well, I'm looking for Altanis, actually.
You're looking
with the Cyclops.
Hand in hand?
I think this would be a perfect place to put a Cyclops in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A sea Cyclops, yeah.
With the goats.
Mm-hmm.
The goats.
What would it,
the
goats. What
lots
would it,
of goats.
What would a sea cyclops be?
He would have green skin.
Yeah.
And maybe
he could
breathe. Yeah, he would have gills, but also be able to breathe on land. And like web
dependencies. I'd make him a sailor just so he could say aye aye all the time.
And on that note, good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
If you have any comments, please email saveordiepodcast@gmail.com or visit saveordie at saveordie.info. Follow the cast on Facebook / saveordiepodcast or follow them on Twitter @TheEvilDM.